Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. It is an off week for the UFC, but a great time of celebration, not only because it is my birthday, turning 34 years old today, but because we have a great gift to give you all and a great present to myself. We will be joined today to talk about the UFC summer schedule, all this Jon Jones, Tom Aspinall madness, and more with the UFC Hall of Famer, the legend, the Count, Michael Bisping, making his debut here on the Bonfire Podcast. I will not ramble too much here to start things off. As I said, I'm here in Vancouver visiting family for the birthday, the off week from the UFC, but had to bring you guys a pod with everything that's going on and some great discussion here. So please make sure to like, subscribe, follow, rate, comment, whatever you can do to show a show of support here to the program. It means a lot. I will take a quick break and be right back with Michael, the Count Bisping. We are back here on the Bonfire with a first-time guest of the show, someone I've been waiting to have on pretty much since the beginning. Mike, how are you? Michael Bisping.
I am very well. You don't have to glaze and oil me up, Mike. Come on, buddy. We've known each other a long time. I'm bloody good. Can't complain, mate. How are you? And never mind that. Happy birthday.
Yes, thank you. A great birthday guest. No one I'd rather have, you know, a little bit of a banter with before I head out for the dinner with the family and stuff like that, Mike. And, you know, like you said, we go back such a long time. I like to sometimes when I have the guests here throw like a throwback photo. I don't know if you remember this. I think I've shown you this photo before. It's but when we met about 14 years ago UFC.
I'm going to say Soho House 2016 Toronto.
No, but that was one of the times we met. This was 2007 in Las Vegas at UFC 67. Here we go.
Look
at those two guys there.
What was that, UFC 67?
UFC 67. The main of that event of that was Anderson Silva versus Travis Luter, and Travis Luter missed weight for his middleweight title fight, if you recall.
Wow. Well, look at you, man. You look bloody young. I mean, so do I. You know, we've all aged, of course, but... You've been involved in this sport a long time, brother, just like myself.
Yeah, we have. If you told that guy he was going to be a UFC Hall of Famer who's called now 100 plus UFC events from cage side, what do you think he would say to you?
I'd say, no shit, Sherlock. Yeah. You know, if you would have said that, I mean, obviously that's what I was always working towards and that's what I always felt I could achieve. Many ups and downs along the way, but it kind of made the end result even more satisfying, you know. I had a good career. I had many number one contender matchups, you know, and I lost those. And whether or not they were on TRT and juiced to the absolute gills or not, I lost them fair and square. But, you know, I saw a quote yesterday. What was it? It's like one of those daily stoic things. And it was something to do with quitting. It might be on my Instagram, whatever. But it's only, you only fail when you quit or something like that or whatever, you know. So quit is never winning, all that shit.
Yeah, of course. We know the book and everything. Of course, if you somehow have not read that yet, go out and get it. Absolutely. It's a great thing in the doc as well.
It's a banger.
Yes, it's a hell of a journey here, Mike. And you're also, you're killing it on the acting side too. I don't know if you could speak too much about it, but I know you had said off record you're about to go a little bit of a journey to my part of the world here in Canada.
That is correct. Yeah, I'll be leaving for Calgary in a couple of days. You know, it's funny because... You know, I never saw myself as an actor or anything like that. And I still don't class myself as an actor, even though I've got, I don't know, like 20 credits or whatever. But I do enjoy it. And it's something that I am passionate about. And when I do get these opportunities, I really like to throw myself in and, you know, obviously do the best job possible. You don't want to make a fool out of yourself. And you've got to respect, you know, what's actually occurring here. You know, these are big, big budgets and a lot of time and effort. So you want to be respectful to all of that. And I've done some bits. Like I've got two movies coming out this year, Red Sonja, and then there's another one, which I don't think I can say. It still hasn't been released. But the MMA fans are going to like it because there's some recognizable faces, very recognizable faces in that one. So anyway, with the acting stuff, I was like, because it's a hard business, you know what I mean? And you got to always be going to meetings and doing this and doing that. And to be honest, I was kind of over it all. I was, and I was like, you know what? I live a good life, you know, and I enjoy that stuff. But if it comes, it comes. If it doesn't, it doesn't. And then just out the blue, two lead roles came in. So I've got two movies that I'm doing. As I said, it leaves Calgary on Monday or Tuesday. I'll be up there for a few weeks. And then in LA, I'm shooting one in July. And as I said, they're lead roles and they're really, really fun, interesting, cool movies. One's like a heist gangster film. The other one's like an action. It's kind of like one's called Atlas King. I play Atlas King. And the other one's called The Gambit. And yeah, it's like... I don't know what I can say because I haven't signed the contract yet, but we're all in like some game show and there's people trying to hunt us down and kill us and all the rest of it. It's going to be a lot of fun. So yeah, they came out of the blue and, you know, a lead role is something, you know, that's very challenging, but to have two of them back to back. So learning all the dialogue and as a man that's been punched in the head far too many times, I'm like, shit, this is challenging.
Yeah, to remember all those lines and stuff. What do you like? Do you kind of have a process now and how you go about doing that, though, I imagine?
Yeah, you know what? Because one of the directors, Nika Agiashvili, a Georgian guy, he's been great and he's been giving me a lot of advice. And he keeps sending me clips. Funnily enough, you just got to read the script over and over and over and over and over and over again, you know, and you start to really understand the story. And every time you read it, you get a different understanding and you understand the character, you know. And I saw a clip the other day of someone, an actor talking, say, you read it after a workout when you're feeling all good, you'll see it one way. Read it when you've had a few drinks, you'll feel a different way about it. Read it when you've just had a workout and you're pumped up. So yeah, I just do that. I'm pissing my wife off. I'm sitting around, head buried in a laptop. She's like, oh, he's fucking reading his script again, Mr. Dickhead Hollywood actor. But I don't think I'm a Hollywood actor, but you get these opportunities, I would be a fool to say no. And I'm very, very excited. I'm very blessed and all that shit, you know? Yeah.
And UFC is very flexible. You know, you say, I need to go film this for a month. They're very cool with, you know, working with you around your schedule and stuff.
Yeah, you know what? To be honest, this one actually worked out perfectly. I'm commentating. Well, I commentated last week and I'm not commentating again until Azerbaijan, June 21st. So this just fits in perfectly. But they've always been good like that. Like when I did Red Sonja, I was in Bulgaria for 10 weeks. And they're very flexible. You know what I mean? Obviously, I love the UFC and I love my position there. And I'm so grateful for it. As a former fighter, it's kind of like the dream role. You know, it still keeps me involved with the sport. It keeps me current. And that's my expert subject. Excuse me. I know nothing more about MMA is my expert subject, simple as that. It's what made me who I am. It's the reason that we're talking to each other. So I'm super grateful. So that always comes first to me. But they're very, very accommodating. If I say, listen, I can't make that one, can we switch it to this date? They'll always do the best to work with me. So yeah, very grateful.
Yeah, Azerbaijan, that's going to be a fun trek, I imagine.
Azerbaijan. And this is another thing with the commentary, like, I never thought I'd be going to Azerbaijan.
No, I don't think any of us did.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm going to some weird and wonderful places. You know, I'm off to Saudi Arabia multiple times a year these days, Dubai, Abu Dhabi, you know, and then the rest of the places. I get to go back to London quite a lot, or Manchester, which is great for me. I get a free trip. I get to work. I get to go see my family. So that's great. You know, get to go to Baku in Azerbaijan. But I hear it's a beautiful city. You know, they have the Formula One Grand Prix there. There's lots of money. It's supposed to be a beautiful place. So I'll let you know, mate. I'll send you a postcard.
Yeah, please do. I don't think I'm going to be making that one. So I'm sure you get this a lot, like that kind of the standard questions about the commentary. If someone asked you what your most memorable call is, do you have like a quick answer to that one, or is it still hard to determine?
I don't, because and it's weird, and this isn't because I'm a moron or anything, but I get so submerged in the fights that after the fights, I don't even know what the results are.
Yeah, you're like black out almost, right?
No, I do. It's crazy because I'm just so submerged in them. And then as soon as the next fight starts, I'm so into my notes because there's a tremendous amount of prep. The last one's out the window. One that stands out, I mean, obviously, Dustin Poirier versus Dan Hooker. I remember that one. Maybe because I see clips on Twitter of it. I don't know. But I'm blessed. There's been a lot of good fights.
Yeah, no kidding. How tough are those post-fight interviews when you just got to walk away from the person when they keep trying to get an extra word?
Oh, this is the thing. I always get roasted on Twitter for this. You know what I mean? Because people don't understand there's a TV schedule.
100%. Okay?
I am not running ESPN, believe it or not, you know. So they will say to me in my earpiece, two questions. Or sometimes they'll say, but if they're really short on their answers, go three or whatever, you know, because, you know, certainly if the fights are all going to decisions as well, you know, it can be an issue. Or if you get a first round knockout, they'll be like, okay, take your time on this one, whatever, do whatever you want, just feel it out. But sometimes they'll be like, we got to get going. Two questions. That's it. You know, and then, so you'll ask the two questions. And then the second question, they'll go on for ages and they'll find the cornerman and the team and this and that. And then they'll be like, and they're going on in Portuguese or whatever language. And you got to do the translation. And they're like, okay, rap, you know, we got to get going. And then they're like, oh, and I'm like, I can't, you know, I've got to respect the process. So yeah, I walk off and then 5 minutes later, Twitter gets me, but you know, it's all good. It's all good. It's all fun and games.
Yeah. I mean, that's the biggest thing. Like you guys are under a window, and that's why anyone who doesn't, you know, understand that it's four fights in 2 hour block. And if they all go to decision, you know, those winners aren't going to get the post fight interview and, you know, you might get a televised walkout. Like there's a lot of things that go into
that. Yeah, no, exactly. And like Saturday night at the Apex, the first fight of the night was a decision. After that, all the prelims, they were stoppages in like the first or second round. So we could go long there, you know, and we could ask multiple questions and all the rest of it. But yeah, if there's a lot of decisions, then of course, you know, they've got a schedule, as I say. So, but it's not tough. I love it. I absolutely love it. And I love going in there and speaking to the fighters, especially when it's their hometown. You know, like in France, in Paris, when we've done them there, because the crowd in Paris is just wild. It's insane. And then when there's a Frenchman that's just got a big win and then the crowd's going, I'm like, you know, I love speaking to those guys that are competing in the hometown for the first time in a while or whatever. Yeah. Great moments.
Yeah. Do you think it's a plus or a negative that now on the like main rotation of UFC commentators, there's no more active fighters? Like Dominic Cruz is the last one. He's retired now. It's everyone is, you know, not, there's no one involved in competition. Do you think that's better for the broadcast?
Yeah. Do you know what? It's something I'd never considered. And I don't really think it matters at all, to be honest. Yeah. You know, I mean, excuse me, when drinking sparkling water, it's kind of repeating on me a little bit. Excuse me. I don't think it matters. And I think because it can always get a little complicated if you're training with someone, you know, or you're still in that world and you're friends with their coach and all the rest of it. I think it makes the process simpler, but it's not absolutely essential. I mean, obviously all of us have been in there. We've all fought. We know what these guys are going through mentally, physically. We know about the prep. We can understand if there's like Saturday night, Paul Craig's fight was canceled last minute. We know firsthand how frustrating that must be. So that's why I think it's important that it is fighters that have that role, because we can speak firsthand as to how the fighters are feeling. You know, other people can't do that. You know, that's why they have the play-by-play guy and then us doing the color stuff, because yeah, we've been there.
Yeah, for sure. No, I agree. I think it's set up in a very great way right now. So they're killing it. I love the rotation that they have. But Mike, I want to have you on today. You talk a little bit about the summer schedule. I think, you know, anyone who's down on the sport, man, just look at these next four pay-per-view main events and like this should give you everything you want to and more. But before we get into talking about some of those, have to address, I think, what is the biggest story in the sport right now these past couple of days, all these John Jones tweets, like it's kind of getting thrown back up. I mean, he posted this one this morning. Someone said to him, how does it feel to be retired? His reply was, I don't know if I want to call it retired. I feel like I'll always have an ability to pop in and out and show them I've had many breaks throughout my career. My identity outside of fighting is well intact. I'm genuinely enjoying life and growing in different ways.
And that's great for him. That's all well and good. But if you're the heavyweight champion of the world, then you have an obligation to the sport, to the fans, to the other fighters in the division. Live your life. And if you are somewhat retired, just be honest and come out and say it. Mm-hmm. Obviously, Dana has been very adamant that fight's going ahead. So I think maybe it's John just messing with Tom psychologically, because, you know, he's a master of his craft and he knows what he's doing. And but if he's not doing that and he has no intention of fighting and he's just stringing it out for a while because he wants to hang on to the belt, then that's appalling, to be quite frank. You know, I feel for Tom here because Tom's in the prime of his life. He's an absolutely incredible fighter. You know, he's just dispatching of everybody with ease. You know, he's the best finisher in all the sport right now, and he's in the prime. He should be fighting every few months, every six months at least. You know, every 4 or 5 months he should be back in there building his legacy, making money, and just doing what he was put on this earth to do, you know, and what he's trained an entire life for. Yet he's just sitting around on the sidelines waiting and waiting and waiting. So I'm sure it's extremely frustrating for Tom, the fans. You know, I mean, I know, because I've said this for a long time. I think Tom smokes him. I do. And I think John he's probably very conscious of that threat as well. I'm not, you know, I'm not saying he doesn't think he can win, but he understands that this will be a tough fight. But they're all tough fights. They're all supposed to be tough fights. I never went into, well, most of them. There was a couple that I knew. I was like, I'm gonna, this guy's not on my level. But most of them, you know, you go in there and you're like, shit, this is gonna be tough. You know, when I went up against Vitor Belfort, juiced to the absolute gills in Brazil, you know, you take one look at him, you're like, this is going to be tough. You know, he's a two-weight division champion, heavyweight and light heavyweight. He's juiced to the max. He's kicked everyone's head off for the last four fights in a row, you know. But this is what it's called being a fighter, taking on a fight and a challenge that you don't know you can win. Mm-hmm. You don't manipulate the circumstances so you only get opponents that you know you can beat. That's not called being a fighter. That's called being a bully. That's what Jake Paul does. I credit Jake Paul for being a great businessman. I don't class him as a fighter because he manufactures these scenarios and these situations where he's so massively stacked. Now, that doesn't mean someone can't go out there and cause an upset. Of course, it's fighting. But for John to not want to give this guy an opportunity where other people gave him an opportunity, he was the youngest champion in this sport. And he's always talking about, oh, there's always going to be younger guys coming along. Well, what about when you were fighting for the belt and you were the youngest person to ever do it? You got that opportunity. And when you become the champion, there is an obligation to do that. So defend or vacate. It's that simple. And all these cryptic tweets and going out to Thailand and living his best life and shit, great. If that's what you want to do, congratulations. Go off, enjoy your life, but do the decent thing.
Yeah. Is there a chance that maybe the UFC just hasn't acknowledged it, right? Like, you look back at the Khabib scenario, he was very clear, like, I'm done, and they wouldn't acknowledge him vacating and, you know, moving on until, I guess, they had exhausted every option. John did have that tweet saying, like, I've told the UFC my plans. I'm not sure why they haven't shared them with you guys yet.
So I just saw a clip on YouTube this morning of that, I have no idea about any of the context. John is, you know, as I said, he's a manipulator. You know, he manipulates things to his favor, and he's a smart guy. The smarter you are, the better a fighter you're going to be. Simple as that. Fighting at this level of mixed martial arts is not a sport for dumb people. So he's a very smart, educated, well, intelligent, two different things, intelligent person. He knows what he's doing, you know. So maybe he's just trying to hype the fight because when the announcement comes, or maybe there is. I mean, maybe he has had conversations with the UFC. I don't know that. I'm not privy to that information. Mm-hmm. I can't see that being the case. You know, I mean, we all know Dana White is not a man to hold back. You know, he speaks his mind. And if he was to say that, I'm sure Dana would have no problem in saying, right, okay, well, we got to move on, you know, because the sport always moves on. You know, if you look back throughout generations of the UFC now, you know, back in the day, it was Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz. And it's like, what's going to happen when these guys retire? Then along comes George St. Pierre and Anderson Silva. Then it's Ronda Rousey. Then it's Conor McGregor and Brock Lesnar and Alex Pereira. They'll always be the next guy. And John Jones is on his last legs anyway. You know, what's he going to have? You know, another fight? Are we going to wait another 3 years after this one for another fight? You know, they don't need him for the business. He's good for the sport, and we all want to see that fight because it will be gigantic. But I'm sure if he has, I mean, I'm guessing because I don't know, but my guess would be that if he went and told them, they'd say, all right, well, fair enough.
Yeah. Maybe they're hoping they can change his mind or something. I don't know. Like, from what I've heard, like, they gave him his fuck you money, whatever that number was, and he still wasn't convinced. So I don't know. Like, sitting here now, I feel like we're coming up on the deadline. Like, from everything I hear, Tom is going to be fighting in November at Madison Square Garden. Is it going to be John Jones, or is it going to be, you know, Cyril Gane or something like that? What do you think as we're sitting here now? Do you think we get this fight in November?
It'd be a disappointment for the sport. It would be a disappointment for John Jones, and I don't say that lightly. You know, when you look at, because I was defending John Jones, and people like to say, oh, Bisping's a company man. It's like, no, shut up, you idiots. I'm a fighter first. And I understand, you know, he was a longtime heavyweight champion. He wanted to put on some size. He comes up to heavyweight, and, you know, all the theories that he was ducking Ngannou or whatever, right? He was putting on some size, allegedly. Take him at face value. He's not a guy that's been scared of people in the past, you know. Comes up, fights Cyril Gane, then he's meant to fight Stipe. He gets injured, you know. And then, of course, it should have been, well, he should fight Tom. And it's like, well, that fight was already scheduled. What are you going to do? Punish Tom Aspinall? Punish Stipe Miocic, you know. So I kind of got it. So that's why people were saying, oh, why are you defending him? So I'm not defending him. But if you look at it with a clear set of eyes, you know, don't let emotions get in the way, it all kind of makes sense. However, this is now, if the fight doesn't come together, there's no defending it. And it will absolutely affect his legacy because, you know, there's a lot of new fans to this sport. And yeah, there'll be a lot of people that go, oh, yeah, remember in 2008 and 9 and 10, he was the man. Well, that was 15 years ago. If we're going back to 2010, what are you doing for me now? And in this sport, you're only as good as your last fight. And if Jones' last fight is him ducking Tom Aspinall, it's not a good way to end a legendary career.
For sure. I mean, his light heavyweight resume, bulletproof, unless, you know, you care a lot about the PED stuff. I know some people do, but yeah, like this, if he doesn't do this fight and we're sitting here talking about his heavyweight run, the headline is going to be he didn't fight any of the fights we actually want to see, which would be...
Yeah, exactly. And that's what we're meant to do. I can sit here now as a man and honestly say I never turned down a single fight. The only time I ever questioned an opponent is when I wanted someone tougher or higher ranked. And I think the only time I remember doing that was when they gave me Jorge Rivera. And I was like, Jorge Rivera, I want someone bigger than that. As it turned out, he talked a lot of shit and I was definitely invested come the end of it. So I gave him a good licking. But that's our job as fighters, you know. And again, all this talk these days with the rankings, people not wanting to fight down in rankings. Shut the fuck up. Fight the people that are given to you. Right. It was easier when there was no rankings because there was none of this nonsense then. There was people with a bigger name, people with a lesser name. Right. And that was it. Now they can play this game. So, well, he's ranked beneath me, you know, so I'm not fighting him. Well, who do you want to fight? You want to fight someone ranked above you. So they're going to have to fight someone ranked below them.
Exactly.
It's stupid. The rule should be if you're in the rankings, then you fight, then you take the fight. Simple as that, you know. So, again, it's a similar thing to what Jones is doing. So, yeah. I mean, just step up, sign the contract, fight the fights, do your best, get ready, get your ass in the gym, work your goddamn ass off, do whatever you want, do your cold plunge and your meditation and your breath work or whatever shit you're doing these days, right? Step in the cage, fight your ass off and try your best and let the chips fall. And if you win, amazing. And if you don't, you know you tried your best, you know, and you get to go again.
For sure. And I think a lot of fighters now don't realize too, like, you know, you, if you're number six and you knock out number 10, that could probably do more for you than going to a blood and gut split decision with number five in front of you, right? Like it's it more, I feel like, matters how you win.
Yeah. If you go out there and make a statement, you get a big viral knockout that the world's talking about, then of course you're going to jump the line. I mean, for example, look at the welterweight division right now. It's on absolute fire. It's on fire. Shavkat Rakhmonov is supposedly the number one contender because he beat Ian Garry. Ian Garry was the backup fighter for Jack Della Maddalena. Jack's now the new champ, but you've got Leon Edwards, you've got Kamaru Usman, you've got Joaquin Buckley, you've got, I mean, Sean Brady. I mean, the list goes on. If Joaquin Buckley can go out there and spinning wheel kick the head off Kamaru Usman, I'm not saying he's going to, but if he was to do that, dude, the guy might fight for a belt next and forget everything else because he's explosive and he talks a lot of shit and he's on a streak, you know, and he just knocked out one of the greatest welterweights of all time. That's how the sport works, okay? So stop trying to manipulate your way to the top. Take on the people that you are offered. Be grateful for these opportunities. Work your fucking ass off. Prepare as the best you can. And as I said before, show up and do your job. And if you don't want to do it, go and do something else. Because I never turned down a fight in my life. And the thought of turning down a fight gives me chills, even still to this day. It's just not in my DNA. And it shouldn't be if this is the sport that you've signed up to do.
Yeah. Oh, I miss your era sometimes, Mike. Jesus, I miss your damn era sometimes.
I'm getting on a rant here. I need to calm down. I'm gonna have no job on Monday.
Just last thing, I guess, on this Tom John thing. You know, you mentioned John might be, you know, let's hope the fight happens. John, this is all just mind games, let's say. I saw that interview Tom did like yesterday. I think it was with Demetrius Johnson where he said, like, this situation is harder for him mentally than coming back from the knee injury, which was obviously like a huge thing. like, I don't know, can this affect the fight? Like, can, you know, will John have something on Tom here if we do get the fight through this whole process? Is he creating an advantage for himself here?
Yeah,
or is it not going to matter by the
this
time?
This is what I think he's trying to do. I think he's trying to frustrate Tom so he takes his eye off the ball, you know, and starts doing other things. I mean, John Jones right now, I think he's in Thailand. I saw this video from Jake Shields where it was all, have you seen that?
Yeah, apparently Nate Diaz got dropped and they left the set. And then I think John might have left.
Someone, as usual, he slapped someone, then it all kicked off. But the guy that was kicking off was the guy that John Jones was with on the motorbike sniffing his hair. And he was still wasted from the night before. And then he comes in and he's trying to fight everyone. That guy couldn't fight his way out of a wet paper bag, just judging by how he was trying to fight, you know. Yeah. But he's also with a gang of like 20, 30 Chechens and Russians, you know. Not a group you necessarily want to mix with. Certainly in Thailand. The point that I'm making is that I don't know if he's necessarily doing the best thing for preparing for Tom Aspinall right now. But John has always been that guy. John has always been the guy that hasn't had to live like a nun, you know. Mm-hmm. He's always been the guy that's partied. I mean, he said at a press conference he beat Daniel Cormier whilst he was partying on cocaine, you know. And that's a weird flex, but it is a flex. It's saying, that's how good I am. And that is how good he is. So that's why now I start to, you know, when you think about John Jones, this is the kind of security that he has in his own mind. But still, you got to take the fight. And if you're out there in Thailand and you're partying and you're getting older and Tom Aspinall's going around with his dad and just training every single goddamn day and working out with Eddie Hall and all the other monsters that he has to train with, you know. I mean, if John Jones can pull it off and still beat him after all this bullshit, I mean, my God, it'd be sensational, wouldn't it? What a story that would be.
It would be insane. I remember
have you seen any like betting lines on this? Who's the favorite?
For John and Tom?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Hypothetical betting lines.
Yeah, I mean, I can find something here. There's got, John Jones, Tom Aspinall. DraftKings has John Jones plus 110 and Tom minus 130 currently.
Yeah, makes sense.
So. Yeah, close. Not many fights you'll ever see John be an underdog in. This might be the first.
Yeah, yeah. I get it, though. I've said it from day one. Tom's twice his size. Tom's fast. He's like a heavyweight George St. Pierre. He can wrestle. He's been doing jiu-jitsu since he was 15, 16. He's knocking out the hardest hitters in the featherweight division. You know, the only thing we haven't seen from Tom is what is he like in the later rounds because he hasn't had to get there, you know? And when I saw Jones beat Stipe, I was like, this fight might be a little bit tougher for Tom than what I originally thought. Because I said after one of Tom's fights, so he's going to smoke John Jones. I think I said Jones couldn't hold a torch to him or a candle to him or whatever, you know, and I still kind of stand by that. But it is John Jones that we're talking about, and you've got to give him the respect that he's due. And he's not a man that you want to mess with or certainly take lightly. But still, we can sit here talking about this shit all day. Yeah, the only people that really know is Dana White and John Jones, you know? And they're probably laughing their heads off at old people like us sitting around and debating and punt, you know, just trying to theorize what's going on. You know, we'll know soon enough. November's around the corner. If it doesn't happen then, forget about it.
Yeah, I think we'll hear some news one way or another. I think International Fight Week is, you know, when maybe the supposed deadline is, but we'll see if anything gets stuck to. But let's talk about some
fights. That's the deadline, is it?
I think that's maybe what they like. I think in their perfect world, they would like to announce that fight during International Fight Week if it's happening, which makes sense, obviously. But we'll see. Right. Yeah, let's talk about some fights that are happening though, Mike. They're actually on the book here. UFC 316, a couple weeks away. That kicks off our summer slate here. Obviously, Sean O'Malley and Merab Dvalishvili in the main event. Juliana Pena, Kayla Harrison in the co-main event. A couple of bantamweight title fights there in Newark. One of my favorite cities in America. I think everyone else too. Just kidding.
I fought in Newark, UFC 78.
You
and
did.
When I got there, I got to my hotel.
Yeah.
And there was a letter from the UFC. Do not go out late at night. It is very, very dangerous. Okay. And I just got off a plane. I was absolutely starving. I'm like, I don't care. You know, I can handle myself. I'm going out and I'm going to go find the pizza because I was fighting at 2:05 back then. So weight cuts weren't a thing for me. Yeah. And we went for a walk around to find some food and we quickly understood why we were warned. I'm like, yeah, fuck this, lads. Let's go back.
I remember UFC 78, you and Rashad Evans, the first main event between tough winners. That was a good time. That's where John Jones beat Shogun. And lots of history in that venue. And I don't know. What do you think? Is there any reason to believe Merab Dvalishvili versus Sean O'Malley too is going to be a different fight from the first time?
There is, because I was speaking to Merab on one of the greatest podcasts in the world. I think it's called Believe You Me or something. Absolutely. Like that.
The great Paul Felder.
It's a great podcast. I mean, if you haven't subscribed and rung the bell, what are you doing, boys and girls? Yeah, no, so I was speaking to Merab, and Merab said the hardest shot that Sean hit him with was in the fifth round. Mm-hmm. He said he cracked him, and it really, really rung his bell. And for a second there, he didn't know where he was. And then now we hear, and I don't know how much validity there is to this, but apparently there was a labrum issue with Sean O'Malley, and he couldn't really wrestle, and he couldn't.
He got surgery, so it's definitely legit.
Yeah. So exactly. I mean that. And then Sean, obviously, at that time was riding high on confidence. He's taken out everyone. He was the champion of the world. He defended the belt. He was knocking people out. So you think, you know what? I'll take on Merab. I can do this. It's worth the payday. I'm fighting at the Sphere. I don't want to turn that down, you know? And maybe that's going to bite him in the ass. But the main reason is that he wobbled Merab in the fifth round. And Merab told me how bad he was hurt, right? And every single fight is different. And Sean is going to come into this one extremely motivated. He's going to be working as hard as ever. He wants to get revenge. He wants to get his lifestyle back. But more importantly, as a man, he wants the pride. That's the biggest thing here. Because everything else is all well and good. But as a man, when you choose that this is what you do for a living, this is where you hang your hat and say, I'm a fighter and I want to be the best in the world. And this other motherfucker's just beaten me. That is a tough pill to swallow. So make no mistake, Sean O'Malley's going to come into this one very, very ready, prepared. And if he doesn't beat him, then he'll probably never beat him. And Merab on the flip side is phenomenal. You know, I love everything about this guy. You know, he fights his goddamn ass off, the way he beat Umar Nurmagomedov, the pace, the wrestling, the madness, the kissing on the shoulders, all that bullshit. You put it all together, he's an entertaining guy.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of this quote that Tim Welch gave ESPN? Probably one of the wilder ones. I rewatched the fight in slow-mo so many times. There were tons and tons of shots that barely missed by inches that would have completely changed the fight. And I think a lot of that had to do with the Sphere and the lighting.
Well,
I think he's saying that Sean O'Malley couldn't land his strikes accurately because of the Sphere lights. Is this? Yeah, I can't tell if this is serious.
As a guy that fought most of his career with one eye and lights being an issue. Do you know what I mean? I don't give much credence to that. That is Sean's coach, so of course he's going to say things like that. My biggest question is, why on earth is he watching the fight in slow motion? That sounds painful. You know how the fight ended, like. The research when I'm commentating, you know, it's got to be done. I do a lot of research, but it gets
time speed.
Well, yeah, I do. Yeah,
you have one and a half.
It's going fast as hell. You know, and then sometimes you slow it down because you can't see it properly. You know, because you got to watch these fights. You know how they ended, but I want to pick up striking habits and you know the way they move and stuff like that. And honestly, I'll watch two fights and then I have to take a nap. Because it there's no excitement because I know how it ends, you know what I mean? But it's studying, it's homework. And, you know, I didn't really like doing homework at school. You know what I mean? So three fights, I've got to take a nap. I can only imagine watching a fight in slow motion. Holy shit.
Yeah, hard pass on that. Kayla Harrison and Juliana Pena. I spent like 4 days at ATT a couple weeks ago doing like a project on Kayla. And holy shit, that woman works hard. Like, first person in, last person out every day at ATT, like, you know, leading the practices. Not surprised at all that she has achieved everything she has in her athletic career. The weight cut, we'll see what happens with that final pound. I know she said, you know, that's going to be God who gets me from 136 to 135. She's never made that before. But you look at the odds here, like, I can't recall a challenger being this big of a betting favorite against a standing champion in the UFC. Is that fair here? Or are we underestimating Juliana Pena again?
I don't think we're underestimating Juliana Pena. And I think fair play to her. What she's been able to achieve is phenomenal. And she's done that through hard work and toughness. She's a tough lady. Simple as that. I mean, when she fought Amanda Nunes, it was just her sheer toughness. She's not as good as Amanda Nunes, but the mentality and the toughness that she has won her that fight. Walked her down and throwing the punches in the way that she throws them. It's not the slickest striking. But it doesn't matter if they're connecting. You know, she's very effective and she's very tough. But then on the flip side, you've got, you've got Kayla Harrison, and she's a force of nature. We know all about the Olympics and the judo and the physique, and you've just spoke to it, the hard work that she does, you know. I understand her being the favorite. But and these ladies, they like to talk a bit as well, you know, so that makes it all the better. Juliana Pena is not backwards in coming forward on a microphone or in a fight. And Kayla Harrison is the same way, so she'll be a good one. Don't make me do a prediction.
No, I won't. On to 317 here, International Fight Week.
Let's go.
Is this the right fight? Did they make the right call here with Ilia Topuria and Charles Oliveira? I know Justin Gaethje apparently was pissed he didn't get the call.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. I get it for Justin. You know, I mean, he deserves a title fight, let's be honest. But he just beat, Rafael Fiziev. He just beat Fiziev. He took it on short notice. And it's someone that he'd beaten before. And yeah, it was a great fight. And Fiziev's not an easy guy to beat. But Charles Oliveira, who did he just beat? Michael Chandler. All right. Mm-hmm. Okay. Similar kind of wins. Before that, he lost to Armin Sarukyan. Charles is very, very exciting, though. Yeah. Let's be honest. He's a buzzsaw. He's got the most bonuses, submissions, finishes, all that shit. He's a bonus machine, right? He's excitement personified. He's going to walk forward and he's going to take it to Ilia Topuria. I'm leaning towards Ilia big time, you know, because Charles takes risks. That's what makes him exciting. Those risks may result in a win, may result in something spectacular. But Ilia Topuria sticks to the basics and the fundamentals, but just does them at an extremely high level. He's got beautiful footwork. He's got ridiculous power in the hands, and he'll probably catch him. Probably, you know? Yeah. But this is the great thing about fights. I was a 10-1 underdog when I fought Luke Rockhold and I knocked him out in the first round. So that's the thing. That's why I never used to bet anyway when we could bet. Because I know the nature of the beast. But I didn't anyway because, you know, it's like...
It's way too... I know. I think I've only bet one MMA fight ever. Like, officially, it was when Dan Henderson fought Shogun the first time. So,
oh, really? I thought you were going to say when he beat me for the first time.
No, I would never do that.
I thought we were mates, Mike. 2007 and all that.
Of course. No, I would never do such... what do you think International Fight Week, Hall of Fame that week, Vitor Belfort? It's been mentioned a couple times. Are you...
you know what?
Not thrilled about this?
You must be the 1,000th person that has asked my
opinion. Sure. It's the first thing that comes to mind. Like, it's fair.
And I've said the same thing every time.
Okay.
And when we were in, I think it was Des Moines, Iowa, Paul Felder had to do a little piece on camera for the package, you know, where we speak about the greatness of the people getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And they said, yeah, we won't ask you, Mike, for obvious reasons. And I said, you know what? I don't care. I'll do it. You know, I mean, when you look at it and you remove all emotions from it, the man was the UFC heavyweight champion of the world at 19. He then became the light heavyweight champion. He almost became the middleweight champion. He's been the closest thing we've had to a three-weight champion. Mm-hmm. Was he a massive cheater? Of course. Did he take a lot of steroids? Of course. Were there a lot of other people doing that at the same time? Absolutely there was. You know, so I was like, I get it. But then when I thought about it and I thought that I lost an eye because of this guy, I'm like, yeah, no, he can stick his Hall of Fame up his ass. And that'll be your headline. But he does deserve it. He does deserve it. You know, you can't deny what he did inside the octagon. You just can't deny it. You know, going back old, I forget when his UFC debut was. If that's not a Hall of Fame career, I don't know what is. So, you know, whether you like it or not, whether, you know, he deserves it.
Yeah. It's a weird one. I mean, like you said, you know, there's eras in the sport. You know, you look at baseball, like you can disqualify a whole thing there. Like, it's just obviously unfortunate that, you know, a huge degree of physical repercussions come with that, though. It's much different than hitting a freaking ball with a bat, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. Mate, you haven't got to tell me. I'm living proof of that. Exactly. Right? I mean, the injuries that I have, you know, my neck is screwed up so bad. I'm in pain. If you had the pain that I had on a daily basis, Mike, you would crumble. You would cry yourself to sleep every night. Last year was so bad. I honestly didn't know how I was going to continue living my life. I was in so much pain. It was insane. I had 3 surgeries back to back. None of them helped. In fact, all they've done is make my condition worse. I've got one eye. I've got 2 total knee replacements. I've got a torn labrum. I need to get that operated on. I've got this gigantic lump on my wrist. They want to do an operation on that. My nose is destroyed because they took my ribs and rebuilt my nose, but they messed that up so I can't breathe through my nose at night. What else is going on? There's plenty of other shit, but this neck is so bad, man. It's so bad. But it is what it is. I lived an absolutely phenomenal life, and I still live a great life. As the hours go on throughout the day, it gets tougher and tougher, you know. But we crack on, mate. We crack on. It is. I knew what I was signing up for. And yeah, sorry, I went off on a tangent.
I appreciate all the insight. But
yeah, but it's like, you know, it was a different time. People were taking steroids, you know, and it isn't hitting a ball into a net or whatever. It's trying to crack someone's skull, you know. And I never took steroids in my life, and I'm very proud of that, because I value my ability and believe in my ability to fight. I've always done that. And that's why I came to this sport, having not really done anything really other than some flowery, powery Japanese jiu-jitsu as a kid, and became a champion of the world and did some pretty big things because I was a fighter. And I'm like, I don't need steroids. People that take steroids, it's weakness. It's a lack of confidence, you know? So if they're one of those guys, I actually feel sorry for them.
Yeah, I know we got a couple more minutes here, so I just want to touch on these last two.
Go ahead, because I've got a doctor's appointment coming up.
I think this is a great segue as well, Mike. PRP. Yeah, you talk about, you know, all the physical consequences that come with the sport. UFC 318, the Dustin Poirier retirement fight against Max Holloway, and you know, he has spoken all these times about, you know, he could keep going, he still can do it, but how much more does he want to give of himself to the sport? When you look and hear everything Dustin's saying going into this fight, like, do you look at a guy that is properly accepting his time, and you know, look what the UFC is giving to him to honor him as well as a send off.
Yeah, I mean, Dustin Poirier is. I mean, show me someone that's not a fan of Dustin Poirier, right?
Conor McGregor.
He's incredible. Yeah, well, of course, I'm not surprised. But legendary fighter. I don't know Dustin too well, but from what I hear and my interactions with him, seems like an awesome human being as well.
Yes.
You know, like I've spoken to him a few times, obviously, over the years, and sat next to him at fights and been on a bus, and we've shared some words and stuff like that. But I've never hung out with the guy. But every interaction, I always walk away thinking, what a great guy. What an awesome person. And then, of course, in the octagon, he's just phenomenal. And I think, what is he, 36, 37, something like that?
Yeah, 37 by the time the fight comes, I think.
It's time to retire anyway. You're a lightweight fighter. You know, I retired at 37. It's about that time. He's been in there for years and years and years. He's made a lot of money. I think he's come to terms with that. He's not going to be the champion of the world. That's what kept me going, because I hadn't had my title fight. I'm like, I still think I can do this. Dustin, sadly for him, he has had a few opportunities and wasn't able to do it. And, you know, maybe he's come to terms with that. He's made plenty of money. And believe it or not, there's another life after fighting. I was having this conversation with Anthony Smith last week. Yeah. Obviously, he just retired. We were sitting in the car going on the way to the Apex. And I know everyone likes to think that me and Anthony hate each other these days. We were sitting in the car and I was giving him some advice. I'm like, yeah, exactly. This is it's an exciting time, because you build yourself into this version of who you are and who you present to the world. But we're still only young men. You know, Anthony's 36, so's Dustin. Still got, what, another 50, maybe 60 years left to live? There's so many different adventures and ways to reinvent yourself. That's why I like going back to the movie stuff. You know what I mean? I've got goals and dreams that I want to aspire to. I want to coach fighters one day, but I haven't got the time to dedicate myself to that, you know, because when you're a coach, you've got to be selfless. It's all got to be about the fighter. But the point I'm making is that when you retire, when you step away from this sport that has opened so many doors and provided so many opportunities, and of course, financial security, the possibilities are endless. And the same drive that made you a success in the UFC in the first place will make you a success in your post-fight career.
For sure. And he just announced he's got a baby boy on the way. So, like, you know, you got a reason to get out. Yeah, you got a whole other chapter of fatherhood.
Last thing you want to be is like me. One eye, living in pain, no knees, no neck, half a brain. Get out while you can, boys.
There you go. So to close out the summer, UFC 319, I think this is the one I'm most excited for. Dricus du Plessis versus Khamzat Chimaev for the middleweight title, August 16th in Chicago. Man, I feel like everyone was saying for years, like, Chimaev going to be champion. It's like almost like it was just inevitable at that point. But now I'm seeing a lot of people, now that this is set, actually picking Dricus. So what's happening here? Are we high on Dricus? Are we low on Chimaev now? What's changed here?
Yeah, Khamzat Chimaev is incredible. He's exciting. He's a finisher of the highest degree. He's all out aggression. He's a character. I love everything about Khamzat Chimaev. But we can't ignore the fact that the two fights that he hasn't finished were decisions against Gilbert Burns and Kamaru Usman. And in that fight, in those fights, he started to slow down. And that's what allowed Kamaru and Gilbert to come back in. This is a five-round fight. We've never seen him go five rounds. He got tired in a three-round fight. Will he get tired in a five? Of course. And you know why? Because he's undefeated. So he hasn't had to learn the lessons. When you're undefeated, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I want to kill everybody, right? And he does. He goes out there, he picks people up. He has a chat with Dana White, chokes him out unconscious, bangs him out with the right hand, whatever it is, right? The man can seemingly do whatever he wants to people. Doing what he did to Robert Whittaker was just insane. So why are you going to change that? You're not, because it's working. And even the two fights where you got a bit tired, yeah, so what? You still won. You still walked away with it. So he's going to go at Dricus du Plessis 100 miles an hour. And that's why we all can't wait for it, because it's going to be phenomenal. But on the flip side, you've got Dricus du Plessis, right? He's a big, strong, determined, very skilled fighter as well. He's an incredible grappler. I mean, we've seen the videos of him choking out an entire Gracie Baja black belt one after the other. He can wrestle. He's got good judo. His striking's good as well. I know people like to talk shit about the rhythm and the timing. Is it effective? Yeah. It's like when I fought Dan Henderson at UFC 100, my boxing coach was watching videos of Dan Henderson going, lad, you're going to fucking destroy this guy, right? He's shite. He's shite. What happened? Boom. I got slept, right? It's not about being the most technically pretty. It's about being effective. And Dricus is very, very effective. And one thing we know, whether or not it's the operation on the nose or not, right? The cardio's improved. He can go five rounds. He just did it against Sean Strickland. He finished Israel Adesanya in the fourth. So there's a possibility that Khamzat goes at him. And other people have got out the first round of Khamzat before. He's been to a decision twice, so why can't Dricus? And then once he starts to get tired, that's when Dricus starts to have success. I think it's all going to be about weathering the storm for Dricus du Plessis. But this is why it's such a great fight, because it could go one way or the other.
Yeah, is that a great, amazing fight? Is that your most anticipated of these fights you've talked about? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's the middleweight division. Yeah, so I've always got a keen eye, only one. On the middleweight division, I do watch it closely. And I'm a fan of both men. Dricus du Plessis is awesome. Honestly, I'm like a real fan of this guy. I got to meet him and his girlfriend or fiance, I apologize.
It's his girlfriend.
In Australia after he beat Strickland. We changed hotels to some fancy pants hotel, and that's where Dricus was staying. And we sat down and, you know, we had a beer and just shot the shit a bit. And he's just awesome, man. He's just a great human being. And Khamzat, I've been around him a bit as well. He's a bit more sinister, but I like that about him as well. This is a sport where we're trying to rip each other's heads off, okay? So you don't have to be someone that your mum wants to, you know, like if my daughter brought Khamzat Chimaev home, I'd be like, I'd have something to say. Do you know what I mean? But this ain't that. I want to see who's the best in the cage. And Hamzat's perfect for that shit. So yeah, this fight's going to be brilliant.
Yeah, truly can't wait. Well, I appreciate you being here to preview the summer, Mike. And I know you got a doctor's appointment to get to, so I really appreciate this. Great birthday present. And I'll make sure you check.
I'll say this prick Mike Bone that has not stopped hitting me up relentlessly, time after time after time. I said, to be fair, we're old friends. We go back to 2007. So I had to make the time. Mike Bone, keep doing what you're doing. Up the bonfire. And I will talk to you soon, brother.
All right. Thank you for being here, Mike. I'm going to take a quick break and I'll be right back to wrap things up. That does it for another episode of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Michael once again for his time. That was a blast. As he said a few times there, we go way back. That throwback photo is just crazy to look at from UFC 67. Just two young men there. And look at us now rambling and ranting about the sport we all love and are still so deeply involved with. What's your guys' most anticipated fight for the summer? There's some bangers coming up here with those pay-per-view main events. I loved his analysis on that. Of course, appreciate him opening up about all the health and stuff he's going through. That's just you know, I hope you all appreciate what these fighters do for our entertainment. It's the real deal in there. So I'm going to go enjoy my birthday with the family. They're all waiting for me. Going to do a big dinner here. But please, again, make sure to show some support towards the program. Had a lot of fun doing this one today with Bisbing. We will get him back on again in the future for sure. Going to enjoy some days here with the fam. We'll be back in Toronto next week to bring you another show. And hope everyone has a great week, a great weekend. And until next week, we will see you back here by the bonfire.